So welcome to Extraordinary Outcomes, where we inspire people and we redefine success. I want to introduce you to Felicia Joy, who is an author, an executive, a serial entrepreneur, a Harvard grad, and actually one of the funniest and most grounded persons that I know. Welcome, Felicia, to Extraordinary Outcomes.
Thank you, Marche. I love being here. I'm so proud of you. This is awesome.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming. So you are actually my inaugural guest. You are the first. And for as long as I've thought about doing this, I have always wanted to interview you and to share your story with others, because it has always been so inspiring to me. And I just think my whole intent for doing this is to really help people see that there are ordinary people around us doing extraordinary things, because I think a lot of times people believe that they have to be stars or have thousands of likes on social media or, make lots of money to, have some sort of popularity to be successful. And I just think that that is not the case. And I always say, if you look around, you'll see people all around us who are doing some great and extraordinary things. And you are one of those persons. So
thank you.
Hey, let's start by your just sharing, like, where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Sure. Just a little bit about yourself. I am technically from Columbus, Georgia. I was born at Martin Army Hospital in Columbus. But I grew up in a variety of places. My mother was in the military. She was in the Army for 27 years. So for a while, we actually lived overseas in Zweibrück in Germany when I was very young. But ultimately, I grew up in the suburbs of Atlanta in the Stone Mountain, Lithonia, Decatur areas.
Okay. And do you mind sharing? Because I would like to kind of take everybody on a journey of sorts of what was your journey from Columbus, Georgia to where you are now? Because you are doing some extraordinary things. So share a little bit about your life growing up.
Sure.
Was it like being a military, in the military, a kid of a military mom? And what was growing up like?
Sure. Ooh, God has brought me a mighty long way on a very, very winding journey. So I'll try to summarize that, and then we can perhaps go deeper on anything that you want to. I don't remember a lot about Germany, but we'll start there. What I do remember is at that time, my mother was still married to her husband, Oliver Browder, and something called Volksmarching is popular there, or was then. It's like these hikes through the woods. And I remember doing that a lot with her husband and getting medals for that. I have memories of school there, like building gingerbread houses and stuff. I don't know why these things are particularly potent memories from that time, but that's what I remember. And then when we moved back to the States, my parents got divorced. So my mother moved to Ellenwood, Georgia. So I lived there for a period of time. My mother and I have an amazing and wonderful relationship now, but my mother is 84 years old. So she was born in 1939. She grew up at a time and went into the military at a time where they didn't want women in the military necessarily, not Black women. So she was, I realize now as a grown woman looking back, under a tremendous amount of stress. And she had life experiences when she was a little girl that also shaped her in some very particular ways. And my point in sharing that is, I think the combination of things that she had a lot of fear around and the experience that she was having trying to build a better life for herself and for her daughter made her very protective in ways that sometimes went too far. And as a result of that, we had some challenges when I was growing up, and I ended up going into foster care. Mm-hmm. And that shaped my life a lot. I wouldn't take it back, because from my biological mother, who I love very much and we're so close now, I learned discipline, persistence, to value and lean into being an intellectual, to be a lifelong learner. I learned to navigate challenges and adversity from my foster mother. And I went through several placements in foster care, but ultimately I ended up with one woman, Elaine, who ended up being my foster mother for the longest. From her, I learned compassion and the importance of service, the importance of having a relationship with God and spirituality and how it grounds us, and the importance of humor. You mentioned my sense of humor early on. I learned the importance of humor and the importance of family and community. So because she was a foster parent, that says something about service and community. She also had a ministry with her best friend where we would pick up homeless people on the weekends. And on Saturdays, we would cook breakfast and serve it to them. On Sundays, we would cook dinner and serve it to them. And we would serve it on tables with white tablecloths and everything like a fine restaurant, because they believed that your life experience, so these folks being homeless, shouldn't mean that they should have a lesser experience in terms of how they're treated. So that's some of my journey. I'm happy to go into other details, but that's kind of a snapshot of my journey.
Yes, I love that. So the person, the foster mother that you always speak so highly of, Elaine, how old were you? Like, what was the span of time that you were with her?
So when I first went into foster care, I was 9 years old. So I wasn't with Elaine at that time. The goal of foster care, at least then, I don't know what it is now. I don't follow the policies as much now, but the goal of foster care is to reunite the child with their family as soon as possible. So in that first placement, I was in foster care for 6 months. They sent my mother to counseling. They sent me to counseling. The goal was to rehabilitate and to reunite. So I went back home, but I eventually ended up back in foster care. And at that time I was 12, and that's when I was placed with Elaine.
Okay. Okay. You know, I recall your saying, and I just think about, seriously, you are someone who, from the moment, the day that I met you, it's like, I could see such ambition. It's like, you always had a vision. I remember you're saying, like, when you really didn't know exactly how you would pay for it, like, you went and got an office. And people thought, like, what are you going to do from this office? But it's like, you always had this vision. But I always think, like, how resilient you have always been. I remember something that you said once. You said, like, there were times that I didn't know who would pick me up from school in the afternoons. That had to have been hard as a child. Speak to that just a little bit. Like, what was going on as a child in your head? It's like, you loved your mom, and yet I'm sure you didn't understand, like, what's happening. But, like, speak to that just a little bit. Like, what were your thoughts as a 9-year-old separated from your mother and kind of going back and forth? What were the things that were happening?
It was a very difficult emotional experience. I can articulate it now, of course. Then I didn't have the language, but I certainly felt the emotions. And I would say I was conflicted, because it felt better to be in an environment where I knew I was not going to be hurt and abused, but it felt painful and sad to be away from my mother, who, despite the behavior, I knew somehow loved me. Mm-hmm. So that was quite difficult. And yes, in foster care, there was a lot of instability, and that really shaped me a lot. It still affects me to this day, actually. I've learned a lot through counseling and through spirituality and prayer and reflection, how to manage the anxiety. But what I'm referring to is that instability creates this desire to always know what's coming next, and to try to very specifically define your life and your environment. And, you know, I've been a planner, and I always have a plan projected far out. And I believe it comes from that experience of not knowing who might have been picking me up from school, or sometimes coming home and after this grandiose welcome from this family that you're living with, being told that you need to pack your stuff, which was very often in trash bags, and we're moving you to another placement or taking you to a shelter because this family doesn't want you here anymore. Mm-hmm. And it could be a result from something happening in their lives, or from you just doing what children do, but the family not wanting to deal with it anymore. That kind of instability was deeply hurtful and created a lot of anxiety that really shaped me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then you end up with Elaine, you're growing up. This is 9 to high school.
So ended up with her at 12. Yes. And grew up, well, I ended up going back home once again, but then eventually came back into foster care and stayed with her through leaving for college at 18 years old. And that was also such an adventure because she had other foster children and her own children. So we were like the Black Brady Bunch, but she was a single mom. So strong. So just such a great foster parent and a great parent overall, and guiding all of us in all the ways that we needed to be guided because each child needed something different.
Yeah. And in that moment, was that inspiring to you? Like, and actually this is my first time ever hearing your talk about like feeding the homeless and really fixing the tables. I didn't know that. Like, mm-hmm. Was that exciting? Did that feel purposeful to you at that time?
No. that felt like a lot of work. And like, why do we have to use our weekends? We already went because she is a devout Christian. So it was like, we already went to church on Wednesday. We already had Bible study at Mama D's house. Mama D is how we referred to her best friend, Doris. We called her Mama D. We already had Bible study at Mama D's. We already went to church. Now we have to spend our Saturday and Sunday, our whole weekend, cooking food, unloading the van, doing all this work. It felt like work. Yes. And at that age, I just wanted to go have fun or chill or whatever. But I am so grateful now that the lessons that were instilled through that service were instilled, because it has definitely shaped how I think about the world and what I do in the world today.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Now, something that I know is when you went to college, you didn't initially go to the college of your choice, and then you did. And then, you know, just kind of goes on from there. Speak a little bit to this. And here's why I'm asking you this. A lot of times, and I just feel like your story is just such one of inspiration, because a lot of times we think like a no is a hard no forever, or if things don't go exactly our way, is over. Let's kind of get into the adult Felicia and the growing, budding Felicia, because we've heard like, okay, this has been your journey. Say a little bit about school, post high school.
Yes. I did not have great grades in high school. I went through a lot, as you might imagine, in terms of emotional trauma, and that affected my ability to focus. So it wasn't that I wasn't intelligent or didn't have the ability, but sometimes I just didn't study as hard as I needed to. What also affected my grades was, for a period of time while I was in foster care, I lived in the shelter and we went to school on site. We did not go off site to a school building with other children who were in school. And those credits didn't always transfer. So there were gaps in my education as well, gaps in terms of credits and gaps in terms of quality of education. So all that affected my GPA. But I ultimately graduated from Stone Mountain High School, and I had a teacher there. I remember her to this day, and I always wonder where she is. Her name was Jacqueline Bostick. And I was thinking, maybe I'll just go directly into the military. I had that as a reference point for my parents being in the military, because I was thinking I couldn't go to college. And she told me, yes, you absolutely can. You can go to a college that has some remedial classes up front that you can take to demonstrate that you can do college level work, and then you will come out of the remedial track and be on a regular track. So with her help, I applied and I started at Fort Valley State University in Fort Valley, near Macon, Georgia. I took those remedial classes. I was determined to prove myself and redeem myself. I was more emotionally stable then, not saying completely emotionally stable, but much more so than I had been during high school. And so the rest is history. I was able to redeem myself and go from there.
And then you went to the university of your choice beyond that. Yeah. And the rest is history, as they say. And I want to just speak to, you haven't stopped. You have not stopped. So several years ago, you graduated from Harvard. You did postgraduate work at Harvard, and you're currently working on your PhD.
Yes. So a few years ago, with people raising eyebrows, like who goes back to school to get a master's at, I think I was 36, 37. So I went to Harvard and got my master's. I didn't even think I would get in. So when I got in, I was like, this is definitely a sign and this is what I'm supposed to do. And when I went to visit the campus for open house, I literally cried. It felt like home. So I knew I was supposed to complete that program. So I got a master's in human development and psychology with an emphasis in behavioral science. So applying the psychology to behavioral solutions in any number of contexts. So that was my master's. And at the time, I did not want a PhD, which was why I looked for a master's program. And the one at Harvard was the only one I found that really focused on what I wanted to learn. So I left my job and I moved into the dorm and I went full time to school. Having completed that and going back into industry and doing the work, I realized I really enjoy understanding human behavior and how to apply it to solve problems in the world. So I decided to look into PhD programs, and my top choice was University of Chicago Booth School of Business. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am now getting my PhD. And I wanted to go there because Richard Thaler, who is recognized as the founder of behavioral economics, is on faculty there. And I wanted to be at the school where he is.
That's so awesome. That's so ambitious. That's so, so awesome. And I often think to myself, it's like, I don't know where you get the energy, the focus, because she's doing, Felicia's doing this all while holding a full-time job and doing so many other things. It's traveling the world for leisure in between these things as well. It's awesome. And we thank Ms. Bostic, because I think that that was also, as you have just mentioned, I think that everything else beyond that probably was inspired by, like, hey, you know what? Go prove yourself, get accepted in a place. And then it's like, just build on that. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about, because I know that you do have a great relationship with your mom now. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about forgiveness and how has that played a role just in your life and how you, you know, speak to that.
Sure. For me, empathy is an antecedent to forgiveness because I had to start to think about things from her perspective to be able to forgive her. Because for years and years and years, just a conversation with her would irk me. Like, I would just be so agitated and just ready to leave the room within 5 minutes. And I'm not even talking about a conversation about our history. I'm talking about a conversation about what we're doing today. Just her presence, just talking would make me so angry because I just had so much built up rage that had not been expressed and expelled from what we went through. And what I felt like was her refusal to acknowledge what she did to me. And I remember expressing that to her and expressing that to her multiple times and her response being essentially, I was a good mother. I did the best that I could. And when she kept saying that, it just made me angrier. And then I eventually, again, going back to empathy, when I started to think about it from her perspective, realized that I am saying to her what we went through, the physical abuse, the emotional abuse, the words that were said to me that made me think little of myself, that totally obliterated my self-esteem as a little girl. The first person to break my heart was my mother. Mm-hmm. That hurt me. And I just want you to acknowledge that that hurt me. That is what I was saying. But what she was hearing was, you were a bad mother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't accept the words because that felt like having to say, I was a bad mother. And she wasn't trying to be a bad mother. She did everything she could to be a good mother. So that was too much for her to accept. So when I started to look at it through that lens of empathy, and I prayed, God just gave me this moment of clarity that she's not ever going to be able to acknowledge it in the way that I want her to acknowledge it. Yeah, power. So when I made that shift, then I realized it made her shift too. And although she never has and never will be able to acknowledge it in the way that I needed her to acknowledge it, through the changes in our relationship, through the way that she respects my boundaries now, which was not true in the past, that is her way of acknowledging it. And that is how I was able to forgive.
That's so powerful. That is so very powerful. We're going to start to wrap up, but I just think about some things that I know about you. You did a comedy show once. I think you took a comedy class or something, yeah. And it ended with a comedy show, which was absolutely funny. You've written a book. You have done Miss CEO, that is now defunct, but it was really cool where you highlighted. I go into a Brazilian wax business now, and she has enframed that she was named one of the Miss CEOs. And it just always reminds me when I'm there, just of your own brilliance. Can you say, as we start to close out, like, what is it that, like, you've tried a lot of different things, and some things work, some things you realize, what's the journey? What has been the journey? Because it has been colorful. And you're here and you're doing quite purposeful things. But what was all that about?
Yes. Initially, it was actually about trying to prove myself because I felt inadequate. So I felt if I rack up accomplishments, like athletes are trying to rack up championship rings, then this proves that I am worthy, that I am valuable, that I should be loved, because for a long time, I didn't feel worthy, valuable, or loved in the way that I wanted to be. So I felt if I have enough accomplishments, that will bring the validation, that will bring the love. Mm-hmm. So while the effect of that was great, it was the successful things that I did, the source of it was unhealthy. But over time, with therapy, with prayer, with reflection, it has shifted to being about self-actualization and service. I want to be the absolute best that I can be. Why wouldn't I be? God bless me with this life. That dash in the middle between when I was born and when I leave this earth is a very small dash, but it can stand for something huge and amazing. And that is my goal now. And I am bettering myself and sharpening myself so I can be of better service to the world. I want to see what dent I can leave, what mark I can leave on this earth before I leave this earth. That's what it's about now. And it feels good doing it because it's coming from the right place. I'm not trying to prove anything.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And it feels good watching. It feels awesome watching. Every time the two of us have conversations, like, it's just full of wisdom, you know, exchanged love, exchanged laughter, exchanged. It's just a joy. And I cannot tell you how inspired I am by you and how proud I am of you. So, hey, I'm going to be asking every guest 3 or 4 questions. And so they're just kind of rapid, what comes up first. So the first question is, how would you define success?
I define success as peace. Peace. Because to your earlier point about some people think they need to be popular or have a lot of money or certain titles or whatever those external attributes are to be successful. I think of success not as those things, but as peace, because the peace comes from things being aligned. And when things are aligned, it means you're aligned because what you value is happening in your life, and you're aligned because your relationships are what you want them to be. It's a variety of things. So that's very personal and specific to each person. What produces that peace is different for each person. So that's why I define it as peace, because that's going to look different financially, spiritually, relationally, educationally. It's going to look different for everyone. But ultimately, if you feel that peace, I know for me, for anyone that I'm around, we're in the right place. God is the master engineer. So when we're feeling anxiety, when we're feeling off, when we lack that peace, it's because something is off. So when we align whatever's off, we get that peace. And that to me is success.
Ooh, I love that. Success is peace. That's quotable. I love it. What would you tell your younger self?
You know, it sounds quite simple, but everything is going to be all right, because I didn't always feel that. I didn't always know that. I was always worried whether it would be, but everything is going to be all right.
I love it. And here's my last, that would be what you would tell your younger self. What advice would you give anybody to inspire them about extraordinary outcomes? What advice do you have for the world?
What's the worst that could happen? I think sometimes we don't take chances. We don't go after something because we fear the outcome. And if you are just imagining that in the abstract, it's just a feeling. So it feels daunting and it feels too much. But if you very deliberately answer the question, what's the worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. Literally, usually, it's nothing that's that awful, and it's not something that can't be undone. There are some life choices that can't be undone, but by and large, there is something that it's something that can be undone, or there's something that can be mitigated. And if we think about it, go for it. What's the worst that could happen? And actually think about what could happen. It's absolutely, probably most times, worth taking the chance.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And I love you. Thank you so much, Felicia, for joining me for Extraordinary Outcomes. This is so inspiring to me as to what's possible for this. I have a big vision for this, and you are helping me to feel like it's going to happen. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And can I just say, Marche, thank you for your contributions to my journey. Thank you for what you've poured into me. I do have peace now, and I usually cry when I think about certain things from the past, but that hasn't happened in a long time, and you're a big reason for that.
I just immensely thank you just for being who you are.